Hello and welcome to River Dames. My name is Jackie Farrow. My co-host is Stephanie Rogers. And today we are joined by two very special guests. We have Queenie and Janya from the Random Tea Podcasts. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Queenie.
I'm Janya.
And we're from Random Tea Podcasts. And we have a lot of feelings about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and most notably Captain America Winter Soldier.
Which is perfect because that's the movie that we are talking about today. So this is our Marvel Cinematic Martianesses summer series, which is a detail I did not say at the beginning, but it is true. And today we are talking about Captain America, the Winter Soldier. We're going to skip over Corrections Corner because we said that Thor the Dark World is a perfect movie and we hit it on the head. So just moving swiftly along, and we're going to say our relationships with this movie. So everyone here has seen this movie before, except for Steph. So, Steph, do you want to talk about?
Yes. So, I'm Stephanie, as many people have known before, if you've listened to this podcast at all. But this could be your first time if you're really good friends with our beautiful guests. This is my first time I've seen it, and I was very pumped to see it. And I think you'll see by the end of the episode that this is, like, one of my favorite, probably, Marvel movies thus far. Wow. And I just found it like a really fun time. And I remember back in the day when I was like listening to like hearing that Marvel movies were happening but not watching them yet, I was kind of uninterested in Captain America, and this movie really changed a lot of my feelings about Captain America, even in like the long term. Like, I know when we watch the next couple of movies, I feel like I will enjoy Captain America more as a character than I had before. So great time.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah.
My relationship with this movie is that I've seen it a couple times before, and watching it, having been rewatching the Marvel movies this time, I am like bothered by Captain America in a way that I had not been before. And this movie, I think, really I think I've decided that it's Chris Evans who I am disliking, and I don't think that he understands this character, because I do think that this character is really interesting. And I just like this movie, and I think that the Russo brothers are great, and I think that they take the MCU in a really good and interesting direction, and I think that they understand this character better than Chris Evans does. And so I still continue to like this movie, and I have liked it since the beginning, even though it's very silly. I think that the whole plot of it is absurd, but I don't care.
That's funny. Okay.
Queenie and Jadia, what is your Winter Soldier history?
This is actually the first movie we saw together in person.
Oh my gosh.
And we saw it after our first con together. We went directly before we even drove home to our home city and saw this, and we both adore this movie.
Yeah, and wow. We've both seen it
a lot of times. Way beyond probably counting. Too many.
Yeah. Can I just list my relationship as married to this movie? I adore it.
And Janya has a very special relationship with Bucky.
I do.
So, very special in what regard?
She loves her an anti-hero. And,
yeah.
And this is the movie that made you like be like, that's mine.
Yeah, I kind of peed on him at that point.
Yeah,
yeah.
Anti-heroes are a thing that I have adored my entire life, so I really adore the character of Bucky, and I have to say, I disagree with you. I think Chris Evans is a great Captain America.
That's so interesting.
I love me some Chris Evans. What? He's a precious golden retriever.
That's just so interesting, because I think that he is, like, the weakest. I feel like he is just, like, this straight, white, likable, pristine man who has been just, like, liked his whole life and is playing this role that is sort of like a weirdo who I feel very strongly is, like, an asexual queer person. And he's just, like, trapped in the body of this Chris Evans, and Chris Evans is just playing it like the character is Chris Evans, when I feel like he's not, you know, like, he was this, like, tiny weirdo, and now he is this beautiful man, and he's not at all conflicted about that.
It's funny, though, because, like, we've seen him do press, and we were more on Tumblr and everything around this movie than we are now, but when you see him do press, and you hear him talk about, like, his anxiety, and all the stuff that he's had to do to overcome that, and, like, his thoughts on the character, like, I think that kind of helped me as well, like, to kind of appreciate his portrayal of Cap.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know too much about Chris Evans as an actor, so I would believe that I'm
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Chris Evans in many other movies. I mean, he was in Train.
Oh God,
Snowpiercer.
Oh God, Snowpiercer.
Chris Evans is in Snowpiercer.
Yeah, it's.
Who is he? Snowpiercer.
You need to experience it.
It's an experience. Let's just say that. That's the best I can give it.
Is he the main guy in Snowpiercer?
There's a whole podcast that we did about it, completely voluntarily.
voluntarily, I like that word. I mean, it gives an insight into your feelings about the movie.
Yeah,
but when you compare comic book Steve Rogers, I got the name right, to MCU Steve Rogers, he's Captain America.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're big Evans fans. I think he's a precious pancake.
Do you think the Marvel, the comics version of Captain America is very similar? And like, because I kind of agree with Jackie that in this movie he doesn't, and I don't know if this should be a separation of the movies, where maybe the first Captain America movie was more about him dealing with the fact that he was a different person now, whereas this movie is more a fact of him dealing with the fact that he is no longer in the era that he is supposed to be in.
Yeah, and then the man out of time movie.
Yeah, he's a man out of time movie. And then secondly, like, he's a man out of time in a place where it's like no longer okay to just like trust your nation, you know, whereas like the time he came from, it was like, oh, just trust your leader, you know, trust authority kind of.
But see, that's the thing, like, Steve has never followed orders, like, ever. Anytime anybody's told him like, you can't do this thing, he's like, watch me.
Yeah.
And so like, I see him as he loves his country and he's very patriotic, but he's never been patriotic to the point of blind obedience.
Mm-hmm.
Which I always thought was a good counterpoint to Hydra and the Nazis, which that's kind of their hallmark.
Yeah, I think that part of it for me is that I still object to the sort of like blind patriotism that Captain America, you know, like in the first Captain America movie, there's that scene when he and Red Skull are just like talking about their ideologies, and Red Skull is like, there will be no flags in the future, and Captain America is like, not my future, and you're like, what do you believe, Captain America? Like, what are you trying to defend here? The right to have flags? And they never really resolve.
Yeah.
Like, I think Cap is all about choice. And I think we see it later, especially in Civil War. You really see what Cap is about.
Yeah, and it's, I guess, not that's true. He really, I mean, he is ideologically consistent in that he just believes that like people should be free to do literally whatever they want.
He has a strong moral compass, but it doesn't always align with my company or my country says I need to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, case in point,
you feel that in this movie
is he kept trying to get enlisted, even though he'd been denied over and over again. He was not listening to authority. He was completely ignoring it and going against law.
He's so fighty.
Yeah. Hmm. But
it's funny because I never saw that like first kind of not following orders as the same as like this movie's kind of like not following orders. But they are similar than
they're,
I realize.
Yeah,
it's
very,
kind of like,
yeah, he's
when
a
the
very
weak
consistent
person
character.
It's kind of funny because it's like, oh, when the weak person doesn't follow orders, it doesn't like mean as much as when the strong person doesn't follow orders. Mm-hmm. But like, it really does mean as much, like in the long run. Like, both are like acts of rebellion, and it's kind of upsetting that I wasn't able to like see that, you know, like that, like people often look down upon the people as like weak, as not being as like, you know, feisty or being able to fight back as really they are.
Right. And I think that's kind of one of the qualities that Erskine saw in Steve, is not necessarily like, he wasn't the good soldier. He wasn't the one that was just going to follow orders and point a gun and shoot it. He wanted him to think, and he wanted him to make judgment calls. And I think that's why he saw Steve as the right candidate. And so I think that's, like, I have a deep abiding love of Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
So maybe to, like, flip Jackie's perspective is not, like, that Steve is now a tiny man in a large man's body. Like, Steve was always a large man in a tiny man's body.
I absolutely think that.
Like, I agree.
I don't disagree with that. I'm fine with saying that I'm wrong about thinking of him as a tiny man in a large man's body. I do think that his, like, worldview lacks nuance. Like, I do still find him to be sort of just, like, irritating, and that he, like, really is fighting so purely for what he believes in, but is not really willing to like take a moment and really evaluate like, what do I believe in, and like, do I believe in the right thing? Like he always thinks that he's right to be doing what he's doing, even if...
True, but when he does make a mistake and he recognizes that he's made a mistake, he's like, okay, that was wrong.
He'll course correct.
And he'll course correct.
But yeah, yeah, he does, once he makes a decision, he does tend to...
He does get blindsided. Yeah. I mean, not blindsided, he's blinders.
And I do, yeah. I do think in this movie there were a couple of times, especially the moment when he mentions how Fury told him not to trust anyone, and there's the moment when, what's his name, like the evil guy says to him,
Pierce.
Well, did he also mean not to trust him? Or he says that to himself, like, did Fury also mean not to trust Fury himself? And I think, like, that was an important moment where he had to, like, realign and then choose, no, I am going to keep trusting Fury, kind of, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, he had to decide a lot of times, like, was he going to trust Nat? Was he going to trust Fury?
Was going to trust Sam.
Yeah, exactly. So I think he had to make a lot of big choices in a short amount of time.
Mm. Yeah. But I don't think that he actually ever, like, I see what you're saying, Steph, but I don't know if he actually changes his mind. Like, does he reevaluate and then come to the conclusion that he was wrong ever? I can't think of examples where he does that, but he does, like, you're right that he does, like, take a moment to think about, like, oh, do I need to not trust Fury? Do I need to not trust Nat?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, he wasn't wrong about trusting Fury, and Fury was always his, like, immediate authority figure, but he does say the thing to Fury at the beginning that's like, you need to be, he, like, questions why Fury is so bad at trusting people. Yeah. And then Fury has the whole line where he's like, of course this is why I'm trusting people, because, you know, this guy who won the Nobel, I love that
line,
the
line he turned down a Nobel
had given
Peace
up
Prize.
The Nobel Peace Prize. Because I think there's already, like, weird stuff about the Nobel Peace Prize, like, in general, that's kind of annoying sometimes. Because oftentimes I feel like the Nobel Peace Prize is given as, like, a... Do you remember when Obama received the Nobel Peace Prize? And it was kind of, like, before he'd even really stopped the war in Iraq. And
right, it was more like stopping the war in Iraq, which is continuing to happen. It was
a very confusing thing. But I often think it's, like, maybe given as a message as, like, you need to create peace rather than, like, peace has happened. Because, like, peace is never achieved. It's a responsibility, as that guy says.
Yeah,
And then maybe that's a bad quote to keep saying, because that guy was an evil man. So I don't know.
I don't understand why that man was evil, because he does seem like a good person. But then it seems like he's just been performing a good person. But that is such a nice line that does make you sad to think someone can have that line in their mind and then also be a Nazi.
But I think Captain America does learn... I think he changes his mind in this movie that Fury was right to be kind of, like, hateful. Like, Fury's kind of hateful in his lack of trust.
Right, like, Captain America does take it personally at the beginning when he's like, why wouldn't you tell me there was another mission going on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which maybe that's almost like Captain America's figured out his ego a little bit. Like, hey, like, maybe he shouldn't know everything all the time. But I don't know, because by the end of the movie, he is the captain again.
Right.
You know, he's, like, the one leading the fight, and he's...
Although, really, Maria Hill
But he's
is leading,
leading the fight from
an
underground group now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Maria's really the one calling the shots. You're right on that one.
I love
she's running this
Maria
op.
Hill. That is my rose. Any movie with Maria Hill in it is better.
I agree.
I'm livid that she goes to work for Stark Industries as anything below CEO. She should own that company, or she should walk out the door. She's so qualified.
It's funny because she popped up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I know, yeah.
Shortly after this movie.
And they have that whole thing where they're like, oh, you went corporate? You're working for Stark now? And I was like, what are you doing for Stark? They have no product. They don't do anything.
I feel like she doesn't really work for Stark. She's just like, you're going to start paying me and I'm going to do whatever I want. And they're like, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, that's...
Pepper just needed somebody to talk to.
Aww, there you
let's
go.
Be real.
And who
let's
better to talk to than human exposition machine, Maria
You'll
Hill.
Never guess what Tony did today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Pepper Potts.
Pepper Potts is the anti-Maria Hill.
I adore Pepper.
I like Pepper
really?
As well.
I want to hear why you adore Pepper.
I think she's grown a little bit, but, I mean, and she's always going to suffer from she's never the star of the movie, so you don't get as much of her as you want.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she's consistently shown that, like, she can manage all the stuff that Tony can do, but he's really not capable of doing to the extent that he's like, squirrel! And he gets so distracted. And so I really like that she's consistently shown as, like, the one that can, like, literally lead the company better than he could. And I like that the MCU has recognized that and not made a weird thing out of it. Like, Tony's like, yeah, no, Pepper's going to run the company. Of course she is. Why would we do anything else? I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I like Pepper Potts as a character, but I do think that I love Gwyneth Paltrow's performance of Pepper Potts, because she just, like, makes her such a specific person that you're like, of course you should run this company.
Yeah, and that may be it, too, because I'm not the comic reader in the group. So all my experiences with these characters, because I really don't know many of them pre-MCU,
mm-hmm.
I'm just informed by Gwyneth's performance, and I really love Pepper in the movies. Mm-hmm. I would always love more of her, though.
Okay, yeah. And you're saying that Stark Industries doesn't have a product, but it does.
What do they do now?
Explain to us.
They're not...
The S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarriers, the Quinjets, they build all... They're still a defense company, they just don't build weapons.
That's so messed up. That's nothing. There's guns on those Quinjets. Out of here.
Wait, so do the jets not have weapons on them?
They're firing guns at them.
That doesn't mean they make them.
Tony's got a really weird moral compass.
He's really weird. But they do. They make the Quinjets and the helicarriers.
The movies don't say this, but I could easily see Tony justifying to himself, like, it's okay to arm the good guys, because he's like,
oh, come on,
S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm part of S.H.I.E.L.D.
But that was his whole philosophy at the beginning, if he still feels that way.
Yeah, but that movie came and went. I mean, yeah. he had an entire story.
But it was still there in Iron Man 3, you know? They were like, oh, we can't buy this brain technology, because what if someone made someone's brain a weapon?
In Iron Man 3, they had clean energy, right? Wait, when was the clean energy thing?
That was in Avengers. And that kind of disappeared as well.
They're still working on that. In the background.
But, I mean, so they do have product. I mean, so she's not just a figurehead of a company that doesn't do anything. It's real work.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it's real work. I mean, they have so much.
It's one of those things that I kind of wish the movies would get more into, but I know they can't because now they've got 4,000 characters.
Mm-hmm.
And the last Iron Man movie didn't really address this at all, because now all of a sudden he's got 43 other suits.
Yeah. Well, no, they broke them all up, though.
Yeah. And then then he was back in Age of Ultron, like, I have a problem with the timeline.
That is interesting to think. Because I think that, like, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is, like, a real organization. You know, like, people who are in charge of that are doing real work, for sure. But they don't, you wouldn't really be like, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has a product. And I've always sort of, imagined that, like, Tony Stark, like, closed up shop on Stark Industries, and Stark Industries has effectively become like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So to think that like it's actually like making Quinjets is very upsetting.
but we kind of see him do that a little bit in what movie?
Well, I mean, at the beginning of Civil War, when he's like giving $1 billion to these MIT students.
But, I mean, look at the Iron Man suits. Look at Spider Man's suit. I mean, that's all weapons.
I think it's all whatever Tony's whim is.
Yeah, but that's not Stark Industries. That's right. Like, those aren't for sale. No one can buy those.
That's a good point.
That's true.
There is a difference between like what Tony makes and what Tony sells in a way that's very interesting to me.
Yeah.
Huh.
But I'm that nerd that would watch like a 2-hour movie of like Stark Industries business stuff.
Oh yeah, I want to be in the boardroom with Pepper Potts for a full Stark Industries. Week. I just want to follow her around.
Yeah.
Well, so back to Captain America, Winter Soldier, because this has been...
I'm not done with Tony
about
Stark.
Tony Stark, who's not in this movie once.
No, he's not. One of the few movies he's not in.
But apparently his Quinjets are there. Firing
weapons. I was really
weapons.
Hoping he would be in the after effects, like, scenes, or the after credit scenes, there'd be, like, a Tony Stark
No,
show.
They had to preface Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
What was the... I've already
They had
forgotten.
To do a couple of things. Yeah, because they had the twins show it's, up, mm-hmm. and then what was the other after
What was this?
Scene
I was just going to say, I can't even remember what the second one was.
It was either. Fun, though.
It was...
Yeah, it was something stupid.
I
it wasn't
it was
like...
Oh, it was that they had... No. When was... Loki Scepter is the first one again. There was... That first one was very long. It was like, we've got the Scepter, and then all these people are dead, and then also here are
and
these superpowered
the
children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The twins was the second thing.
No, the twins is the first one. It was all one thing. It was so long. It was like, here they are in Europe, and they're like, oh, S.H.I.E.L.D. has fallen. We have the Scepter.
And it's Strucker. And,
Strucker is here. And then they're like, we've killed all these kids, and then we have these two kids. This isn't an age of heroes. It's an age of miracles, and miracles are scary. You're like, oh my god, okay. That was so much information that I don't understand. And then there's like a lot of credits, and then I can't remember what the second one was.
I can't either.
Wow, this
Danya, are you Googling right now?
I truly just watched it.
I think that was about Captain...
I don't think we got to the second.
It's Bucky in the museum looking at himself.
Yes!
And
I loved that.
Yeah, because I thought it was Bucky, too. And then I was like, oh my god, it's Bucky. And that happens to me every time I watch this movie. And then when you saw it was Bucky, I was like, oh, I remember. I've felt this way before, but I was shocked that it was Bucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved that. Actually, that scene of seeing Bucky made that whole museum thing worth it to me. Because I didn't really like Chris Evans in the museum. Like, I kind of liked it because it was like him seeing himself as dead and then being like, you know, like seeing himself in a museum. But I also always wondered, like, how important Captain America was in the timeline of, like, him passing away. Like, was he really that big of a hero in the war?
I guess he saved a group of people, you know? Like,
I think if you look at it like... Hydra was a big deal, and because he didn't attack, like, he wasn't in, you know, the Battle of the Bulge or anything like that. Like, he was specifically laser targeted to Hydra. So if you look at it from a standpoint of, wow, Hydra was super scary, Cap becomes a big deal.
Yeah.
But is Hydra something that people know, like, about? You know, like, isn't Hydra, like, just people just think of Hydra as, like, oh, like a division of Nazis?
Yes.
So it's not, so like, it does seem,
but
more
Hydra,
like...
But Hydra is different. Like, that's what's funny. I always thought that this movie wanted to preface it as though Hydra was, like, a limb of the Nazis that was forgotten, but, like, almost more evil than the Nazis, which, like, I don't think is, like, I don't, you know, like, I don't want to say
that. Yeah, right, no, that was a
bit of a complaint trying to say that.
The ahistoricism of the first Captain America movie.
And I think it's funny because in future, I want to say... Shield, Janya, and correct me if I'm wrong. I want to say in future, when you have, because this was that was one thing I love about this movie, is it had such a great tie-in with Agents of Shield. They referenced, like, you would hear Hydra folks talking in later seasons. They'd be like, "Oh, we're not Nazis anymore." So, like, it was funny because Hydra had a PR problem because they stemmed from the Nazis, that they were continually trying to be like, "We're totally not Nazis," but it's like, are you? Like, you still are.
Well, that was the most interesting thing to me about Hydra in this movie, is that they really wanted no powerful people. They wanted people to become, like, all cogs in a machine. Like, they like, Hydra, in a sense, is, like, what people see the worst versions of communism to be, is communism is, like, all, like, lack of individualism and lack of people who are powerful, and, like, I loved the line where he mentioned, like, this will attack everyone from, like, the president of the United States to, like, the valedictorian in Iowa. You know,
anybody,
like,
that would
any person
question.
That poses a possible threat in the future, which is funny to me because, like, I don't know why those machines wouldn't target, like, Hydra itself,
right,
in a sense. Like, and I think that would be cool, like, if that
if,
like,
they turned it on,
if there
was some
alternative version.
I think it's going to target anybody that would question Hydra's leadership. So it's not. It's not necessarily that anybody in power, it's just anybody that would make trouble.
Yeah.
For
but
Hydra.
But that's what's funny about, like, when you look at, like, Stalin. Like, Stalin started killing everyone in his ranks because, like, anyone can start questioning leadership. Like, anyone even within the ranks. Like, it's,
and
like, him
was
like a natural
crazy
human instinct just to, like, question authority. And, like, so, like, at what point do you stop, you know? And then it's funny because Hydra becomes this, like, technology, like, there might be a day and time where, like, the leader of Hydra is like, oh my god, like, the technology is, like, too much. It's killing everyone around me. And then they want to stop the technology. And then Hydra's technology is like, nope, sorry, you know? It's almost creating this, like, artificial intelligence, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like Skynet.
Two things I want to say to that. One is that I think it's fascinating that Captain America, whose whole thing is that he's, like, from this analog time, and now he's like, oh, there's all these computers. I don't understand anything. I gotta watch Star Wars. But to think that this character's biggest enemy is, like, literally a computer. It's like someone put their brain, like, someone created an incredible AI, and that is his enemy of this movie. I think that that's such a wonderfully poetic thing.
Yeah, I always kind of like that, too.
I also think that what you're saying about communism is interesting, because then the scene at the end where Natasha Romanoff is, like, testifying, and they're like, you're kind of dangerous. Why aren't you in jail? And she's like, you can say what you want about powerful people, but, like, ultimately, I'm the only person who can save you, so you're not going to put me in jail. It's just, like, such an interesting thing in contrast. You know, it's like, oh, we're going to take out the Iowa valedictorian. Because
it's
he's
funny,
too powerful.
Though, especially in the light of Civil War, because it's like, yeah, we will put you in jail. We've got a special superhero jail. It's called the Raft.
Yeah.
So it's like, she immediately challenges them, and you know somebody in the government is like, all right, somebody get on that.
Yeah, I guess that's why they build that jail, because of that, specifically because of that testimony.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, wow. But I liked that Jackie's saying almost like they didn't do what, like, other governments would have done, and that they were like, they respected the powerful thing and let it exist outside itself instead of hurting it. But I guess,
yeah,
I guess
that is like a weirdly sort of pro democratic thing, and also like a complicated thing, because it's not necessarily, you know, like, it's kind of weird to be like, well, these dangerous super spies are just too powerful for us to put in jail. You're like, I don't know if I like that, but also I guess I prefer democracy to violent
and it's
communism.
It's funny that Nat's the one they're questioning, and she literally has, at least in the MCU, because Johnny's going to get on the she was super soldier too in the Red Room, but at least in the MCU, we know of no enhancements to her. She has no power. She's just awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's also the same age as Cap, by the way.
In the comics.
In the comics.
Yeah.
And she had absolutely nothing to do with the Winter Soldier storyline.
No.
She wasn't in it at all.
She didn't? But she was my Rose.
She wasn't
movie.
In it.
Really? I love her so
much. I mean,
much.
She was great in this. Okay. I'm going to go there. So in the Winter Soldier comics, Steve and Sharon Carter actually have had an on-again, off-again relationship for quite some time by the time we get to Winter Soldier. So
oh, whoa.
I don't like that.
I know. I don't either.
I hate it. Emily
like
Van Camp
want,
is my
still,
thorn.
It's still canon. You can hate it all you want. It's still canon. He never had a relationship with Peggy Carter. He was always with Sharon Carter. Sorry.
She's heard me bitch about this a lot.
But,
oh, wait. He never had a relationship with Peggy Carter?
No.
I mean, he never had a relationship with Peggy Carter. He crashed a plane into an iceberg before they really could, like,
wait,
do anything.
Wait,
other
but
than
no, did they
didn't.
Even kiss?
But,
did they even kiss?
No. Not in the comics.
No.
They were just, like, friends.
Barely.
Yeah.
Peggy
they were
Carter
just, like, associates.
Peggy Carter wasn't even a part of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the comics.
Which I'm glad they changed
oh.
that.
Oh.
Because, like, I love
Susan
Peggy.
I think the movies are more trying to elevate.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Peggy Carter was barely in the comics, but anyway. So,
but then again, 40s.
So it's my theory is that they, because Sharon Carter was kind of an unknown in the movies, and Natasha was a very well-known character, that they kind of brought her in to be a
that
Sharon
role.
Carter proxy, to be his friend in
oh.
the movie that he kind of had in the comic series when they were looking for Bucky. So that's my current
Interesting.
Theory.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And
that's
I'm glad
why
they did.
Brought her in.
Because
it's
super
so
nice
in the
to
comics
see
when they're looking
also actor
for Bucky,
contracts.
It's Sharon
yeah.
and Steve.
Yeah, Sharon
yeah.
and Steve have an on again off again relationship
she's,
for ages.
She's a huge part of the comics.
Yeah,
see,
she
that's
really
so
is.
Interesting because I that makes me that just really affirms to me that Steve Rogers is a queer coded character in these
he
movies
is!
Because
oh,
but
that's
Sam
because
Wilson,
he
it's
is.
Not even that they replace
you,
it with Sharon
do you,
Carter.
Do you want me to prove it to you?
Yeah, go ahead. You don't
do
I don't
it.
Need it to be proved to me. I believe it. I
okay. Arnie
I want to hear it.
Arnie Roth is Steve Rogers, one of his best friends when he was growing up. And he is canonically gay. So in the
oh,
movies, they gave Bucky Arnie Roth's backstory. Yeah. Roth, R-O-T-H, Roth.
Gotcha.
So Bucky has Arnie Roth's backstory.
Because in
he
the
canonically
comics,
gay.
They didn't know each other before the war.
Correct.
Oh, gotcha.
They met after Steve Rogers became Captain America. So,
oh, whoa.
Yeah, so.
See, and Bucky was like 16.
And Bucky was 16 and Cap was 20.
I just really, I think that this movie has such like a fascinating texture to it if the dynamic between Captain America and Bucky is that like Cap is like ace but queer, romantic and attracted to Bucky in a way that's not as sexual as Bucky seems to be attracted to Captain America. That's what it seems to be to me. That's
because yeah, I've always read Cap as like super bi.
Okay, interesting.
Because Peggy and Bucky and everybody's hot and I'm confused.
Interesting. Peggy.
Oh, I like that.
I don't disagree with that, but I do feel like the Peggy relationship is always like, you know, like to me, it's sort of like he's like so asexual. He had like had no idea how to start that conversation with Peggy Carter. So he was like, I'm just going to fly
he
into this
awkward,
freaking iceberg.
It was the 40s.
Yeah, see,
I mean,
and that's the part where like, God, I wish the MCU had the balls to do this like the right way and actually address it. Because if you're going to have an ace character, that's awesome. Tell me they're ace.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree.
How much of that is like Johnny said, it's awkward in the 40s and I'm 5 foot tall and you're pretty. And how much of it is like, sex is gross, but you're still pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, And there's so many different flavors of Ace and Aero. And so, like, God, I wish one day we will live in a world where there will be comic book movies that address all that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that the relationship between Sam Wilson and Steve Rogers is very romantic. I mean, like,
it is. They have a meet cute.
Yeah, like, I get that
yeah,
we
that
need
was
better
cute.
Representations of male friendship, but also, like, playing a Marvin Gaye album for you while you're sleeping in a hospital is so romantic.
That's not
That's
a bro
very
move.
Romantic move.
Isn't it, though? I'd play
also
you that
just,
album.
Like, the on your left thing is so
on your
cute,
left,
too.
Man.
And then, but, like, when he wakes up, it says on your left. I was like, oh, my God.
It's so romantic.
I deeply
he was
love
on his
that
left.
They show.
He was on his left. I made my L's.
I deeply love that they show them being like, you know, you can read it as bro if that makes you uncomfortable. But, like, you can totally read it as queer-coded.
It's so queer-coded.
I would prefer it to be more explicit. But, yeah, I'll take what I can get at this point. From,
it just makes
you know,
me hate the Emily Van Camp thing because it's like you can feel – you can feel moments where someone was like, this seems a little too gay. And they're like, let's add a line about the lady at the front
let's
desk at the VA's
right
office
over.
So that no one's freaked out. Like, let's give him this random nurse lady who's a spy, I guess, who he's friends with, dating, interested in. I don't know.
And it was funny because it's almost like Natalia or Black Widow is like really nervous about him being queer. And
I know.
Like, please just date women.
That last scene, I was like, stop being such a homophobe, Natasha. Let him just be with Sam Wilson, who's right there, and they're clearly about to make out.
Maybe she wanted Sam.
Oh, interesting.
Because I look at Natasha as super bi, too. Pretty much almost everybody in the MCU I could read as bi.
I like that.
Yeah.
I agree a lot. Also because, like, especially since, like, there's not as many women, at least in the first Avengers, it does feel like just a lot of, like, homoeroticism in a great and also upsetting way because there's, like, a lack of women, but also, like, oh, yay.
And, like, I'm cool with homoeroticism because God knows, like, I'm on board with Steve and Bucky 5 ever. but, like, the MCU tends to veer into queer baiting.
Yeah.
For me, because especially with some of the stuff you see in Civil War, like Cap's trying to literally hold a helicopter onto a building because his buckums. And I'm like, that's pretty gay.
I agree fully. But I think that this movie is more, well, I mean, we're going to, I guess that's one of my buzzes, and I'm excited to see how much more queer baiting I feel like happens with Captain America.
Yeah,
but I
feel
like this was very queer baity. Especially that, you know, like, when Sam and Steve, like, first meet in that opening scene, it really feels like a romantic sort of
meet-cute.
And then when Sam Wilson is like, come by the VA's office so I'm impressive to the woman at the front desk, it's like, shut up. That's not why you want him to come by the VA's office, and we all know that.
Yeah. It's Johnny and I were watching this a couple hours ago, and our first thing was, like, Cap was doing something impressive, I think, on the Lumerian Star, and it was like, literally everyone's aroused. even if they're like, dude, I don't like dudes, but dude, if Captain America asked me out, I would say yes.
It was when he jumped off the plane without a parachute.
Yes.
I was like, everybody on that plane is now aroused and they don't know why.
Yep.
Yeah, that was so funny when the one guy's like, did he have a parachute? And then he's like, nope.
No. I loved when he jumped off that helicarrier without a parachute and was like, Falcon, can you pick me up? Because his arm would have been ripped off the way that they handled that situation.
Yeah. He's a way heavy boy. But yeah. So, like, I think the Russos have kind of, I think they've towed the line because I don't think Marvel's going to let him, even if they wanted to be super gay. I don't think Marvel's going to let him, but, like,
could you imagine if Infinity War 4 there's just, like, a hardcore makeout scene?
Well, yeah. I mean, I would love that. But, like,
it's on the cutting room floor.
That's one of my buds, too, because I'm just, like, I need more of, like, Cap and Bucky not being at war, just having, you know, some time together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I honestly, in this movie, I'm shipping Sam and Cap more than I'm shipping Bucky and Cap. Which I was
shut
surprised by.
I know.
I was shocked. I've never felt this way before.
No.
But rewatching it, I was just like, wow.
We're both Stucky trash.
I felt that
Stucky
way in the first
ever.
Captain America movie. But in this one, I really just, I think that this is the best Falcon performance in the whole MCU. I don't know. I'm curious to keep watching that. But
they haven't given him much to do.
Yeah, after this, they don't
in
really
later
give him
movies,
a lot.
So being someone who hadn't seen Winter Soldier, but had seen, like, other MCU later on, I had always, like, whenever I saw Falcon, I was like, who is this guy? And then, like, I was happy to have now, like, seen his, like, origin in the MCU.
I want a feature-length origin story for him. What was he doing in the military?
Because, no, because it was funny. I loved the part in time when, like, Captain America was like, I had no idea this is what you did in the war. And then you're like, what did he do? And then he just, like, rips out this huge, like, Falcon thing. I was like, damn! I was like, whoa! Like, I got so excited and confused, you know?
Can we do fun time Sam Wilson story?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yes.
So, Natasha Romanoff is portrayed in the MCU as having no powers whatsoever, but she actually does because she's the same age as Steve and Bucky.
Yeah, she's been super really soldiered just by Russia.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, she was in the Red Room, and that was, like, ages ago. Actually, Bucky and Natasha trained together for a time.
And banged.
Yeah, they were in love.
It's
real. That's real. So she's actually, like, super soldiered a little, too. Sam Wilson actually got exposed to the Cosmic Cube, a.k.a. the Tesseract, because in the comics it's called the Cosmic Cube, in the movies it's called the Tesseract, but whatever. So he's been exposed to it, and he actually has powers as well. He can talk to birds.
Whoa!
Which is, okay, fun, but
which I think is hilarious.
It is, but
wait,
so
like, what can the birds
so they
give
totally
him that's important?
Downplay that.
Ant-Man is making really use of ants, so I'm not shocked.
Yeah,
that birds
I mean,
would be
true.
Useful.
And Red Wing is an actual falcon.
Instead of, like, in Civil War when he's a robot.
Yeah, he's an actual Falcon. So I hate that they stripped that from these characters, but also they're still really good characters.
Yeah.
They're able to. So we have quote-unquote normals as heroes.
Yeah. Which I like. I really like that not everybody has to be enhanced or bitten by a spider or turned into a not-mutant.
Right, there is something.
Leave my spiders alone.
There's something very interesting about the fact that Falcon is just, like, this guy who was in the military, and I guess he got picked somehow for this special program. There surely were not too many people doing this, but just to think that, like, here's this guy who just, like, enlisted and then somehow got, like, trained in using this particular tool, and now he's
which
like
is a lot like Steve. A lot like Steve. Steve just wanted
right,
to fight
yeah,
on the front
true.
Lines, and he was chosen for this crazy secret program.
That's why
so
I think they're great
I like the
for
parallels.
Each other.
Yeah.
Because Steve is like, it's hard to find someone with shared life experience, but here is Sam Wilson, who has a shared life experience. Which,
and
honestly,
that's
Bucky
why
doesn't
they became
have,
best
you know?
Friends immediately.
Yeah. And also maybe make out sometimes.
Well, and the whole conversation about it's your bed.
Yeah.
It's your bed. That's why you can't sleep. That whole conversation. Because
he was ready to turn away and be like, nice to meet you, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when he realized he found somebody he could connect with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My babies.
I
it's
them.
Weird
I'm
because
decided.
He is really, like, dealing with PTSD right now, too, because he just got out of war. I mean, he was also in, like, the Avengers immediately, but, like, when he woke up,
but
he
was traumatized at the beginning of the Avengers. He was like, I got to box for hours to get the nightmares to go away.
Yeah.
And that is one thing that the MCU, like, again, they can't devote a whole movie to it, but kind of Iron Man 3 was a lot devoted to it. They at least address that. Like, they're not just shiny heroes and everything is pretty and you know, easy. It's these are people. They have stuff that's happened to them, really traumatizing stuff. Tony's got anxiety, PTSD, Cap's got PTSD. Like, so at least that's something that, like, they're shining a light on that, which they didn't have to.
Yeah. Steph, do you want to talk more about Natasha Romanoff being your Rose? I'm really curious to hear more.
Oh, I just wanted to say that, like, in this movie, in comparison to the last couple times we've seen Black Widow, like, I was just sad when I rewatched, like, I had never seen the Iron Mans before I started this with Jackie, and, like, the first time we had been introduced to Black Widow, she was kind of just, like, a sex object, and that was still, like, you know, with, I mean, in just the first, second Iron Man, it was really, like.
But in retrospect, she's not.
In retrospect, she's not. Well,
I think that in that movie, she just functions like a sex object.
Yeah, in that movie, it's really just, like, that movie's just a bad movie, and, like, she. Like, I mean, like, I guess you could say, like, she did a really great job. I guess you could say she did a really great job being a spy, like, if that's your, like, your argument, like, yes.
But there is a scene in which, they're in there's the boxing ring, and Pepper Potts is there.
And she fucking owns Happy.
So there's something happens in the room, and Natasha pulls a defensive stance.
And it's a really innocuous, like, non-fight. Because
you can miss it if you don't look for it. So that shows the Black Widow we are to see in the future.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have to go back and look at that.
You'll if you're not looking for it, you'll miss it.
Interesting. But yeah, she goes into and it's not a huge stance, but it's like her feet spread apart and her arms tense up and
Yeah. And I don't not believe that, like, she was always going to be this, like, incredible spy who has these great action sequences. I just think that, like, that movie treats her first and foremost like a sex object, which just makes it hard to be like, oh, but also, like, she's this thing. Because when you're, like, first a sex object,
I think they kind of set her up the way Tony sees her. Which Tony sees her as that.
I think it's how John Favreau sees her.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be, yeah, she's kind of a sex object, but also she's really not.
Yeah. Because I have... Again,
I think that John Favreau wanted to have sex with Scarlett Johansson so badly that he couldn't do the "but also he's not" part correctly.
I mean, that's true.
Yeah. It's so funny because I've read some fic that kind of fill in. She's talking to Hawkeye and she's like, "Oh my god, I've got to wear these hair extensions and all this makeup and it's ridiculous." And like, I had to pose for these photos and pretend I was a lingerie model. This is debasing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
I mean. Yeah. I mean, this is, like, the first movie where, like, you actually talk to Black Widow. Like, and I think that's because Captain America really, like, has these conversations with her that are, like, kind of, like, who are you? And, like, why don't you tell anyone who you are ever? And, like, she's, like, it's easier this way. And, like, and I know that in the Ultron movie, that's, like, the big start of the backstory of her. And, like, so I was just excited. Because I remember Ultron, like... And I haven't seen Ultron in a very long time. I only saw it once. And I remember, like, being confused by Ultron and, like, not being that into it. Yeah. So, like, I was excited to see this story. Like, I just think the Black Widow, although she wasn't, like, the main centerpiece, it was, like, a really good, like, personal story that still made sense with, like, the overarching story. Like, even before when we were talking about, like, you know, like, when Jackie was mentioning how, like, she was, like, part of KBG and, like, thinking about, like, this in, like, what communism narrative versus democracy narrative and, like, thinking about, like, privacy versus, like, over... Because at one point, that like, the movie is arguing that, like, privacy is good because you don't want, like, everyone to know where your location is and be able to kill... Like, I think there's a hop, skip, and a jump that this movie makes about how, like, we should all have personal privacy because if we didn't have personal privacy, then, you know, we could all just be shot down by like a thing overhead. But then there's the flip side of that where it's like, if you go too far private, then you become like this kind of Scarlett Johansson Black Widow character. Where is it like, are you able to like connect with anyone then?
Yeah.
And it was like so powerful that moment when the guy says to her, like, are you ready for all of your secrets to be shared? And then she said, like, or, like, do you want all of your secrets to be shared? Or, like, you're not ready for that. And then she goes, like, are you? And that was, like, really... Because you just felt like in that moment that she had just, like, kind of beaten everyone. Like,
it felt like she made a very conscious decision in that moment.
Yes. Yeah. And it felt like she went for the
greater...
Like
she went for the greater good, which is cheesy, but, like...
The greater good.
It hurt her personally because it was like, everybody sees all my dirty laundry, but like...
Yeah.
But that's the Steve Rogers influence.
Exactly. I love the friendship of them.
Yeah. And then it felt like she'd been hiding for so long, and yet at the same time,
like it's a relief.
And then at the same time, like, maybe her hiding was never as bad as everyone else makes it out to be. Like, maybe everyone else, like, is like, this is so wrong that she's a spy, and this is so wrong because, like, she's lost her sense of self. And the fact that she's able to be like, no, I'm okay with you knowing who I am, that was never, like, to save myself. Maybe it was, like, to save you and stuff. Like,
yeah.
And, like, this is more important right now for you to know who I am because it's still going to be saving you. It's kind of, like, taking away what everyone else, like, says so poorly about. Like, everyone else puts her down because, like, they're like, oh, well, she's not a real person. Like, she doesn't know how to be real, you know? And, like, and the idea that, like, she can have sex with anyone or seduce... Did you guys see that Jennifer Lawrence movie this year?
That's the Black Widow movie we haven't gotten yet.
Red Sparrow, it's making the premium channels, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is.
It was really good. Like, I stake myself on being someone who, like, gets twists well. And that movie was, like... incredibly good with like in regards to twists, like, and at first you're kind of like, oh, this isn't even a movie about twists, and so like, and then when you there is a twist, you're like, oh my god, yes, like, so like, anyway, so I was very happy with that movie. But also it's like, I realized after watching that movie and then watching Black Widow now, like, I guess there's like a really big history of women in the KBG just like kind of being used at, like, yeah, as agents who are like prostitutes in a sense, but like, yeah, and not even like Black Widow level where they're like really skilled, but like literally just like sex objects, which is like kind of horrifying. But this movie kind of makes me feel like more so that like the Marvel universe understood that and was almost kind of like taking it back, because I think it's kind of like people have like assumed that of Scarlett Johansson. They like assume that like she is able to been such a great spy because she's been able to probably have sex with a lot of men and like deliver their secrets, but like we've actually never seen her really ever do that. Like, yeah, you know, we've seen, yeah, her be like seductive, but we have not ever actually seen her, and like it's not like they would actually show us this on screen.
They've never,
but,
like, even really implied it,
but I could easily, no,
and,
see,
and when she interrogates Loki in the Avengers, like, it's totally not about, you know, like, it's like she, yeah, just understands that like he's a man who wants to feel powerful, and so she lets him do that until, which I guess is sort, yeah, of like a weirdly scene, like it's like letting him pleasure himself by like asserting his incredible power, but it is not sexual.
I mean, it kind of is, though.
I mean, a little, but like,
but yeah, her part is not sexual.
Sexual.
Yeah, and so, but I think this movie does a really good job of saying like that all along when people thought that like that Black Widow was just letting other people use her, and like was only getting power through other people's use, like, in fact, she was always like, she was never being like as used as everyone
else
thought
she was. She was always in control.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was always in control. And like, because she actually never allowed herself to be like wiped away so completely that it would be okay for people to know who she is, you know, to know, yeah, all of the facts. Like, yeah, because I think it's most scary for people who are like purely evil to be like shown so fully. The fact that like she can be like viewed and witnessed shows that she is like not anywhere close to evil, you know?
Yeah, because she's, I mean, like, assuming the MCU treats her in a similar way that the comics did, like, she's done some bad stuff. She worked for, you know, she was trained in the Red Room, and she has that, ironically, a ballerina background.
Oh, really?
And,
wow.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
an Ultron, yeah.
That's why we were like, oh, that's funny that Red Sparrow went that way. But, like, yeah, I think she's made peace with herself between, like, all the Red Ledger stuff that you get in the Avengers and all this stuff. I think she's made peace with, like, what she's done, and she's weighed herself as, like, I'm on the better side, so, like, yeah, come at me, bro. Mm-hmm. And I like that.
Yeah.
Plus,
yeah,
I love seeing her and Steve be friends and it not be this weird,
semi-romantic.
Forced, yeah, yeah, like, will they, won't they? Like, they didn't force her into a weird romantic lead position because she's the girl in the comic movie.
Yeah, and
so
I think that people
was
give,
so nice.
People give her performance in this movie flack for being like, oh, like, when will Scarlett Johansson get to do anything that's not just, like, being super flirty? But I actually think that it bothers me so much that she's constantly harassing Steve Rogers about his dating, yeah, life, but it's not flirty. Like, she's not trying,
no, it's
to
not
date
at all,
him. She's just, like, afraid that he's gay and wants him, no, to please date women. But, like, not her.
Or she wants him to admit it.
Yeah.
Yeah, or, yeah, that. I mean, like,
or,
maybe that's how she's trying,
like,
to get him to, like, come
for
out
his
to
personal
him.
Life.
Like,
please, dude, it's a thing. People are gay. Let's just talk,
well,
about this.
But,
like,
at the same
that's a terrible strategy. If you're someone out there trying to figure out, how can I get my friends to come out to me, do not try to set them up with people of the other gender.
Could just be a constant jab that she's picking at her, you know,
her
friend
bro.
About. I mean, we do it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's fair. But I hate when people do that.
I just like them being just like, they were legit, like, work proximity associates,
yeah,
turned into friends in this. And I really like this because I think even recently, I can't remember if it was Scarlett Johansson or if it was Chris Evans, but they were doing press and they were like, yeah, no, these two, like, out of the whole Avengers, these two care about each other more than, aww, anybody else.
Wow. The two of them,
I think,
said that, like
core
above
Avengers, not that, like,
yeah,
including
the core
Sam
Avengers
and Bucky, you know, because that's,
yeah,
that's very rude to Sam, who cares so deeply about Steve.
I know, I love Sam so much.
Wait, but you don't think like the Hulk and Black Widow? I mean, I know that's like a romantic
honestly, that's a sore spot.
I think the cast was a little like, okay, Joss is making us do this. Okay, this is kind of weird and forced. Because the MCU's kind of backpedaled on that. And Joss did set up.
But they still had that thing in the movie with like the, what's it called? Thor Ragnarok, where you see like Black Widow singing a lullaby to him.
But like, I think it's so funny because Bruce Joss Whedon himself was trying to set up Black Widow and Hawkeye. And then he was like, haha, JK, he's married.
So stupid.
Yeah, that was what was happening. Like, in if you were on
the Black Widow Hawkeye bandwagon, as I was very hard, you weren't imagining that he was setting that up, but then he just changed it.
But because... I kind of like that their dynamic in Avengers did feel sort of just like old war friends who had like been in the trenches together and just like had this shared experience that other people like that they couldn't talk about with other people because they didn't really.
Yeah, because like not everything has to be romantic.
Yeah.
Amen. I'm so sick of romance.
Our Aero in the house. Yeah, that was nice to see in this movie. Like Natasha and Steve just could be brosykins.
Men and women can be friends without a romantic subtext.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, do we have any other? Are we still sort of on things that we?
I don't even know where we are.
We've been quite all over. Do people have roses that they want to point
out?
What's
my name?
Honestly, just to be clear, like, Johnny and I we've ranked the movies, like, God knows, several times. This always ends up as our top movie in the MCU.
Wow.
It feels like such a good balance between, it's got that comic book kind of weirdness and fun and kind of, you have to suspend some disbelief when it comes to pretty much anything in the MCU, but it's also got a really good, like, it feels like a kind of an old spy movie. Like, we feel that it just strikes a really good balance, and this was the point where we already knew the Russos were directing at least Civil War. We didn't know about Infinity War yet, and it was just like, I am handing everything over this.
I'm very happy that they took over. I think that this movie is, I think that scene when they go into that when they're like, oh, like, why would you have a hidden elevator in a hidden spy room, and then they go down to this hidden room within the hidden room, and it's full of computers, and the computers are the villain, and he's like he's from like years ago, and you're like, oh, I remember that character. There's just something that's like very like fun and feels very sort of like silly and campy and comic booky about that whole sequence, that he's like, oh, it's, I've been stalling, you're gonna die right now. It's just like, oh, everything sucks here. That's
because if you put a lot of this stuff like just in black and white on paper and say, okay, hey, so Bucky was 16 years old and da 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 da, and like if you put all this stuff, like, it sounds ridiculous.
Yeah,
so you've got to kind of at least do a little, you know, tongue-in-cheek kind of thing. So I feel like they didn't take themselves too seriously, like they weren't DC. But like they took themselves seriously enough.
I think that the moments that are supposed to hit, like you can laugh at the Zola reveal and still be like, I think that the pacing and the score and just everything about the moment, like that Fury death sequence is so like, you're like, oh no, I'm so sad now.
Exactly,
it's intense.
And it was so meant funny to be, so I think.
You know what's so funny about the Zola thing in general too is like, if anyone was gonna continue Hydra, like, I did not think it was gonna be him. You know, like, he was like the last one on the list of people that I thought was going to be able to, like,
literally the very last.
It's so funny though, because like, I think the first movie kind of downplays him because he's the guy that
he's like the right hand man, right?
Well, yeah, he's the guy, like, who comes up with all the weapons, make all the stuff happen.
But he's so like wimpy, Red Skull's making, and like,
I know, it was very funny rewatching the Captain America, the first, because I hadn't rewatched that movie in so long. And having, you know, like the, I hadn't watched it since after seeing Captain America the Winter Soldier. And so revisiting, like, what was Dr. Zola like the first time we met him? I was like, that's so funny that this guy is going to preserve his consciousness on a computer and but, like, be the mastermind he's the guy that's of Hydra for decades.
He's the guy that's got to get the crazy order and be like, we're going to do this. And he's like, okay, I have to find out how that actually works and make that a thing. Like, to make a weird Disney analogy, he's the Roy Disney to Walt Disney, because Walt would come up with these big crazy things like, we're gonna build a park, and Roy'd be like, all right, well, here's how much steel we need. So I always felt like kind of Zola was the guy that had to like come up with like these crazy things and actually make them real.
I like that idea. That's but it's funny because like those people that are often like pushed into, like, doing things. I often feel like if they were to then, like, lead the thing or preserve the thing, like, I don't think that guy was, like, necessarily, like, so evil that he would, like, make this master manipulated thing in, like, I don't know. I just think he's, like, a smart guy and not a bad mastermind, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, it's funny because you get a little bit more of, like, Hydra as a, you know, their grand plan. And so, like, Zola wasn't the dude in charge after Red Skull died. Like, there was this big hierarchy and, like, all this stuff. So I guess that kind of context helps me see that as well. It's like, and this movie kind of, like, makes it sound like it was all Zola. And it really wasn't.
Oh, good. Okay, because it really does make it sound like it was just Zola. Like, Zola restarted it.
Which is kind of difficult because we cover Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and we watch it, and we've watched it in order with the movies and everything. And yeah, so it's kind of hard because, S.H.I.E.L.D. yeah, like, but the majority of, like, your MCU movie watchers aren't watching S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And so they don't get all that broader context, and so it's like, it's difficult because it's like, oh, there's all this other stuff and I can't tell you. And it's like 6 seasons now. And, you know,
yeah. all this other stuff. So wagon of 6 seasons.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all just, you know, skip the first half of 5 and you're fine. Or 4.
That's what Jackie
skip any of the, skip the Ghost Rider stuff. I mean, Ghost Rider is cool.
Thank you.
But
thank
that,
you.
Whole yeah. season is a, that whole season
that was so painful to podcast.
Yeah, that was. Yeah. We agree.
But, I do think that there's something interesting about the way that, like, leadership hierarchies function in this movie, and that they're all just, like, kind of vague, because it's like, here's this guy, Zola, who just, like, put his mind on a computer, I guess, and then somehow was leading these people for a long time, and it's not really clear how they got there. But then also the fact that there's, like, this council, the vagueness of this council is, like, a little irritating the Avengers, because you're like, who are
the
these
world
literal
security
shadows?
Council?
Yeah.
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 But then in this movie, it's
story.
Like...
story. Zola had nothing to do with the Winter Soldier. Actually,
in the comics?
Well, Project Insight in and of itself is an MCU creation.
Okay.
It's not in the comics.
That makes sense.
However, it was Red Skull, and behind him was somebody by the name of Alexander Lucan, who was trying to work with the Tesseract, and that's how Bucky came back.
Oh,
and that's
interesting.
That's who was really pulling the strings behind the Winter Soldier. It was Red Skull and Lucan. And the
Is
Winter
Robert
Soldier was
Redford's
reintroduced
character?
In the comics due to him trying to get the Cosmic Cube, a.k.a. Tesseract, back.
Does Robert Redford's character exist in the comics?
Yes.
Okay. And he is, because that whole, like, his job was unclear to me. It's like he's above Fury. Is he in a, like, is he a high-ranking U.S. government official?
In
does he
MCU,
work for
the
World Council?
He's part of the council.
He's part of the council.
Wasn't he?
So why, when they have council meetings, is everyone sitting at a weird little desk, but he's pacing around like some sort of leader? Is he the chair of the council?
I kind of took it as he was the liaison between S.H.I.E.L.D. and the council.
Right. That's what it seemed like to me, was that he was like some big U.S. ambassador.
But it's funny because in the last movie, it felt like Fury was that.
Right. Exactly. Because in the last movie, everyone was sitting in their little chairs and there's Fury pacing around.
Retcons are wonderful, aren't they? Retcons are fun.
Yeah. So I think that just suffered from, trying to connect everything together.
So I'm reading, he's the Secretary of Defense.
So he works for the U.S. government.
Of the United States.
Robert
in the comic.
No, this
sir,
is
in the movie.
Okay. In the movie,
Robert
he's the Secretary of Defense.
Alexander Pierce, this version, is the Secretary of Defense.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting. That makes more sense to me.
Yeah. And this was the first movie that was, like, fully in D.C., right?
Yeah. Yeah, we so actually got, sense. Like, the politics side of it.
Yeah, I did kind of like that. I liked that Gary Shandling was weirdly, like, there. You're like, oh, the senator still sucks.
So, canonically...
Wait, so is the council, like, just the United States, then?
No, I think it's
a world.
No, because, remember, there was the guy who says, what if he... like kidnapped your daughters in
Mumbai. Yeah.
So yeah. So the Shield is not an American agency.
No, Shield is.
Shield is worldwide.
It was primarily formed between the British
and the Americans.
And the Americans, but it is a world. Yeah.
Okay.
So canonically,
but then why is it called the Strategic Homeland? Like, who's homeland? I thought that Captain America fought for a world with flags.
But that's not Shield.
Yeah, Shield has always been kind of, I guess. weirdly amorphous kind of international.
Wait, what is S-H-I-E-L-D stand for?
Strategic Homeland,
Intervention Logistics.
Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
There you go. That one.
Oh, so there is Homeland. Okay. Maybe they were already thinking about aliens? Had
several. Yeah, that's the latest.
Oh, so the Homeland is the world. That's so funny. Yeah.
Against the aliens.
So the current SHIELD acronym.
That's like the third, right?
There's like three or four acronyms.
It's been others.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's so funny that, like, Hydra is, like, is in a sense, like, making the world less competitive against its alien counterparts.
Yeah. You know? Which is funny because like, that comes up in Agents of SHIELD later. The idea of, like, taking out
everyone.
In which season?
The last one.
The one with all the stuff with General, whatever his name is, General Hale, General Ross, General Hale.
Yes,
is the lady.
Hale. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Hail Hydra.
Anyway,
which
sorry.
I think some of that was just they had to like
that was
tie it into Cosmic and Infinity War, but you know.
Yeah. I really did enjoy that like ridiculous scene with the senator
talking about
whore, and then just like going up to the side of his face and be like. Hail Hydra.
It's the creepiest, like, seductive whisper.
Also, it's crazy that the last words that Robert Redford ever says is Hail Hydra as he dies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but his kids were really excited he was in that. So, or grandkids.
They should have been. But yeah.
It's the only reason he took the job.
Also, about the council, like one last thing I have about it is it was so kick-ass seeing Scarlett Johansson like do that thing where she was the councilwoman.
Okay, but wait.
Janya had like the split second of just sheer happiness thinking that was what was actually happening.
I really wanted her to be a kick-ass woman. I did. I also
was very happy about that too. I was like, oh damn, that's why she's at the top of the council.
And then it was Natasha. Yeah. And I was like, actually that was Heidi Moneymaker.
That was mostly Heidi, yeah.
Heidi Moneymaker is my wife. Just gonna say. I love her.
She's
dearly.
Scarlett's stunt double.
Stunt Hello. Double and has been her stunt double from the beginning. And
she's amazing.
I'm so obsessed with her that I can tell you on screen if it's Scarlett or if it's Heidi.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
Wow. She's a nerd. You know,
it's bad.
Wow. That's incredible.
That is incredible.
Yeah. It's sad, really.
but an incredible kind of sad.
Yes.
But, okay. So Heidi's just a little bit hippier.
And usually if you can't see your face and the hair's in the way, it's usually Heidi.
Yeah, that's always Heidi.
That makes sense.
If the hair's in the way. Okay.
Yeah. That's okay. So
that's why her hair's down. That's the only reason I can give for her hair being down.
Because we complain all the time about women
with
long hair
in a ponytail.
Fight scenes. Put your hair in a freaking ponytail, right? It's to hide the stunt double.
Maria Hill always has her hair pulled back.
Right?
Yep. But we see it with Agent May and S.H.I.E.L.D. too. Not as much, though, because Ming-Na does a lot
Ming-Na
of her own stunts.
Is incredible.
Everything. She's everything.
She is.
Well, so. That's awesome. That makes me feel a little bit better about the hair thing.
Yeah, because we usually, that gets on my nerves a lot, too.
And heels. And the hair in heels. It drives me crazy.
She was in Flats.
Oh, yeah, the heels
this
are just
movie,
stupid.
Though.
She was in Wedges.
Yeah, that's true.
They were Wedges.
But some of that's because Scarlett's super short compared to Chris.
She's super short compared to a lot of people.
But, like, Chris is, like, a very tall human being.
That's true.
Oh, that's so interesting. How tall is Scarlett Johansson?
I think she's, like, 5'3" or something.
What?
Look it up.
That's
wild. She's very short compared to like her co-stars, and
of
course
the co-stars are also probably like very tall men.
Except for Robert Downey Jr.,
Robert
who has
Downey
to
Jr.
stand on a box.
Right, tiny Robert Downey Jr. That's why I love
him. Does he actually have to stand on a box?
Yes, he does. He has a box. Yeah.
Oh my god, I love that.
So pay attention in Civil War if he's really close to like the profile shots where he's really close to Cap, he's on a box.
That's I wonder if that's, like, awkward for Robert Downey Jr.
No, that's pretty common in filmmaking. He's used to it. And he's a short guy.
Oh, yeah, Scarlett's, like, 5'3".
5'3", wow.
Chris says only 6. He's not that tall.
Yeah, that's true.
And how tall is Robert Downey Jr.?
Oh, God, he's, like, 5'6", I think.
4'8".
Oh, my gosh, whoa.
That's
incredible.
But it's funny because
he's sitting
Robert
on my
Downey
palm
Jr., so, you know, his swagger's just, like, making up for it.
Yeah, you really do, wow. It, like, makes even more sense now.
No, but he's tiny in that role. You know, he's like a tiny man. You're like,
he's 5'9".
Get back in your protective suit.
No. He's 5'8" and a half.
Oh, bless him little heart. He had to put the half in. Speaking as a person that has to put the half in, I feel that.
I don't put the half just because I know that people will make fun of me for it.
See, that's smart.
Wait, there you go. How tall are you, Jackie? You're like 5'1".
I'm
right?
5'2". I'm 5 foot and a half, but I just say I'm 5'.
5 foot and a half, too.
Yeah.
I'm 5'2".
I'm 5'7", so.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I'm shrinking because I'm old, so.
I was with a bunch of people today that were, like, a head shorter than me, and I actually didn't realize it until we all stood in a picture, and I was like, what the heck?
So, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, we went on that tangent.
So the other thing that drives me crazy is when they use the grenade launcher, and it hits Steve's shield, and it knocks him back off the overpass.
Oh, yeah, and his spine doesn't shatter?
Well, no, it's not that. It's not that.
Super Soldier.
Because Super Soldier.
Right, sure.
But the vibranium shield is supposed to
absorb kinetic energy. Yeah.
Oh. So it can take a hit from Thor's hammer, but it can't take a grenade launcher?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Oh, interesting.
Well, but if his feet aren't stably on the ground, you know, like...
That was what I came up with.
That's what Queenie said, but I still...
Because Thor's hammer comes directly down onto it in a way that, like...
That was literally exactly what I said. I feel vindicated.
I'm not buying it. Not buying it. It doesn't sit right with me. Because that's...
It doesn't sit well?
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
Don't use my jokes against me.
I did, though.
That does not sit well with me.
Oh, my God. Johnny has made every sit well joke known to man.
So that's the big thorn for me in this movie is that grenade launcher hitting a shield.
Yeah, I have very few. Like, my thorn would probably be, like, Nat's hair.
I have a problem with her hair.
The straightened hair.
Her weirdly drying her hair, which who dries their hair like that with a towel and then it's straight again?
Did Sam have a hair straightener just laying around?
He might have, but they didn't show that to me.
I could see Sam having one.
Show me. And I feel like, Nat, do you have time to straighten your hair? I really feel like you don't put it back in a ponytail.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So that was like, I think my biggest thorn was Nat's hair.
Well, you That's and Nat's so hair is a
I have a complicated anyway, so. Relationship with Nat's hair. Yeah.
I have one stupid thorn, which is that I hate this. I mean, when you watch the Ant-Man movies, it's incredible that they can make Michael Douglas look so young. But when you watch the Captain America movies, it's horrifying how bad they are making Peggy Carter look old. It's just, like, disgusting. You're like, that's just not... There's a young lady's face moving around underneath this old lady's face, and I don't understand.
Okay, but it's not.
It is actually...
There's actually an elderly woman laying in that bed playing the part, and they transposed Peggy's kind of face.
Haley, I don't think that it looks a little bit weird to me in the way that, like, the Henry Cavill mustache thing looks a little weird to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's good, but it was actually an elderly
where you can tell it's been jiggered with.
Yeah, in a way that you can, like, Michael Douglas, you can't tell has been, yeah, I mean, like, you can tell he's been de-aged, but it looks just like, it looks like his face, whereas you can tell something is happening here.
I always look at that like they have footage of Michael Douglas at that age.
Yes, they do. Same with
Pfeiffer.
Robert Downey Jr.
And Robert Downey
Jr.
Yeah, exactly.
When they de-aged Robert Downey Jr., though, that one is upsetting.
It kind of was,
yeah. But they actually tried really hard with Peggy, so I got to give them a pass on that because they tried really hard.
Yeah.
They did kind of what they did with Skinny Steve is they had, like, two actors basically portraying. They used Haley's face.
Yeah, I still don't like Skinny Steve.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable and awkward.
It is.
I think they did better this movie than they did last movie.
Oh, they definitely did.
I agree. I think they did better. And I think some of it is that you didn't have to see him shirtless.
Right. And also, like, they were
Oh, you think some of it's the shirtless thing. But I do think they just, like, they might have, like, downsized the head a little bit in a way that was good.
And I think that they were just, you know, like, they didn't have to shoot as much with him. And also, I think that they were selective about their angles so that we were never getting, you know, like, looked less... You know,
they
like,
probably
we
learned
were getting
lessons.
A lot of just like neck up.
He was
sort
just
of stuff.
So much like bobblehead the first movie.
Yeah, he had a very really large was. Head in the first movie.
Oh god! And it's funny because I didn't know the thing. Jackie had to tell me the thing about it being another actor.
Oh yeah, like, it was a big, huge thing.
Oh yeah,
which like I don't know how what I thought was happening there. But I actually think I thought initially I was like, wow, he had to gain all of that weight. And like he had to like get
heart.
All this muscle mass.
Bless
but then
your
I was
heart.
Like and then I figured out that wasn't true, but like there was just a lot going on there.
Yeah, there was.
What did you guys think about the whole like Fury arc of him being
dead, then alive. And also, I really enjoyed the eye thing where he pulls up the eye patch.
I did too.
And okay, he's just so... like, you gotta keep both eyes open. At first I thought it was just gonna be a fully like okay eye, like a very healthy eye. I was like, oh my god, he's been wearing an eye patch this whole time and never needed it.
Yeah.
So the whole him being dead, even okay, so Fury himself, a lot of scenes that Fury had was tie-ins to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Back when they did that. This was that movie. When he's in the car chase scene, because Bucky's trying to kill him or whatever, and he flips over and he uses the torch
yeah,
to get out and escape. That was invented by
Leo Fitz
from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay, wait, but can you explain to me what's happening there? Because it just seems like, and I've watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I still was like, I don't understand. Where is it? Why can't they just follow him through this big hole that he seems to have dug? Like, what's happening? Because plot.
Yeah.
That's all I got. Because plot. Okay.
Yeah.
There were just multiple times where they're like foiled by Fitz, a hole.
Also, the stuff that made him appear dead.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The detritoxin
was originally mentioned on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And bled through to the MCU.
Before this movie came out?
Yeah.
That's incredible. Because they used it
to develop the Night-Night guns, right?
They used it to... Actually, Fitz developed it to use for the Night-Night guns, which are the non-lethal weapons that they use in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So this was back when the season... of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when Winter Soldier came out, you can literally watch the episode that came out the week before, watch Winter Soldier, and then watch the next episode, and the story arc just goes right through.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Wow. Beautiful.
And in their defense, that for having kind of lost their close relationship with the movies, like, once S.H.I.E.L.D. stops existing in the movies, it gets hard to keep having, like, very extensive...
Plus, there was a fight between TV and film
execs.
At Marvel. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah. Where you're not wrong, was? However, they... Yeah, there was. That's why it stopped. Cool.
Yeah.
But however, well, you give about? Us that...
It was kind of... God, what is his name? Perlmutter?
Yeah.
That's why Oh, God, what was the terrible...
They were going to do an Inhumans movie, and then they turned it
that's
into
why
that
Inhumans
TV
turned it... Yeah.
Run. Yeah.
Yeah. They had a big falling out.
Right.
And
they started introducing Inhumans very early on the TV show. And it was like, oh, yes. Wow. Like, I was like, oh, my God, is Chloe Bennett going to be in a feature-length movie because she got this TV gig? But then, no.
Yeah, because he was very behind the Inhumans, and he kind of, like, preemptively, like...
Oh, you told me about that, Chucky.
Yeah. So there was... That's another reason for a lot the lack of tie-in.
But the problem is there was so much promotion of it's all connected, and we get it for one season's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then everything falls apart.
They spoiled us.
And it's like, you give us that, and then you give it, and then you take it away.
Yeah.
And that's not good for people who wanted to enjoy Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a subset of the MCU, which it originally was.
Yeah.
Although I will say that, like, I have an aunt who watches Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. who I don't think would really, like, watch the Marvel movies, like, very seriously, but being able to
You can watch either one independently, easy.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that it's, like, you know, like, having the TV show sort of, like, start to function a little bit more like a TV show was, like, good for some audiences. I don't know.
Yeah, because it started as a marketing device.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was get you thinking about the MCU every week in your home.
That doesn't mean I have to like it.
That's true.
Okay. That's
true. So, wait, Jack, you said like a couple weeks ago that they're holding off on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. 6.
Until after Infinity War, yeah.
Yeah. They say that's not why they're doing it, but like...
I honestly think that there was a lot of cancellation talk because they were like, we literally don't know what we'll do. Yes. Do we have to kill off our characters?
It was saved at the last minute.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they decided they'll do like a half-length season.
Yeah, they did that because they had nowhere else in their schedule to put it.
Yeah, so it's just going to be next summer.
Yeah, they did the same thing with Gotham.
Yeah.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah. Gotham got a half season,
just enough to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Which is fine. Like, I'd rather it be wrapped up than just left hanging.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But also, it should never have started.
I mean, that's true. Gotham, not...
Gotham.
Not S.H.I.E.L.D.
Gotham. LOL.
So, yeah.
I had another thorn, which is that I was very annoyed because it was just giving me such Captain America the First Avenger flashbacks when he's in the helicarrier and he's like,
shoot him right now. It's like, why are you constantly trying to kill yourself when you could save yourself and other people, you know, like with no... And then it was making me annoyed because in Infinity War, he's all like, we don't trade lives. It's like, yeah, you are constantly trying to trade in your own life for no reason. Don't lecture people.
I did feel like this movie, though, was more
it's not a phase, so than Mom, the, is.
More than the plane movie that he knew he could save himself still after the fact.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I felt like it was just like, oh, the plane will go down, I will get out. But then all the stuff happened with Bucky that, like, feels harder, you know?
Yeah. I think it was Steve making the choice between the many over him being the few. And it was like, destroy the helicarrier because of the threat they pose. And if I get out, great. If I don't, like, it's for the greater good.
But then where's that logic in Infinity War, you know?
Yeah, I don't... Yeah.
People change. People change.
Yeah, that's
Bucky
true.
Bucky was back. It was fine.
That's true. He had, well, I mean...
He had Bucky.
You made... I mean, that's a good point. Like, he has a little bit more to live for in Infinity War because he has a bit more grounding to... his time because Bucky's there.
Well, and he's more grounded in the current time.
That's true. That's true.
Right. He's got his boyfriend, Sam.
Exactly.
And Bucky.
I know. I'm sorry.
I thought you kept saying Buffy. And I kept thinking of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I was like, Buffy?
No.
They never crossover?
I'm going to age myself and say that I've never seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So
I've just seen a couple episodes and I don't really get
it. I'm old.
Wait, did you start watching it because of me, Jackie?
No, I watched it once with Ben Fate on Froco duty.
What? Okay, I don't like that at all. So yeah, I didn't really have that many thorns.
I know, I don't really, either.
I really enjoyed this movie overall. I couldn't think of like anything that was like really crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, oh, like my biggest complaint
moment,
is hair related.
There was one moment I was angry about when Cap. Oh. When Cap is like, I've known this place before, and they were in New Jersey, and they were in his old training camp. I got really upset at first, because I was like, he's from Brooklyn! But then it was his old training camp, and I was like, oh, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, there is something, so, you know, like, Captain America would be so confused to see Brooklyn current day, and I just want him to go to Brooklyn, because he's always like, oh, I'm from Brooklyn. You know, there's, like, that scene in Civil War where he and, like, Tom Holland bond over both being from, like, one of the outer boroughs, and it's like, you have such different life experiences. Yeah. You don't even know what it's like Brooklyn in Brooklyn right now.
You don't even go here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, I have my buffalo for this movie, and this is more of like a buffalo hypothetical, is that I really loved seeing at the beginning of the movie the little list of things Captain America like needs
to
see.
Yeah. Like, Berlin Wall up and down.
If you met Captain America, what would be the thing you would tell him that you've gotta see, or like gotta do, or gotta listen to?
That's so interesting.
Or gotta know.
God, I don't even know. Like, it'd probably be like something dumb like Back to the Future for me, but that did change from country to country, that list, which I thought was a nice touch. Yeah, it changed wherever it was released. It was relevant.
If it was in China, it had locally related things to China. And then in Europe, it was Europe stuff. And
yeah,
Russia was Russian stuff.
Whoa, that's really cool.
Yeah. That is also funny because he is like an American fake. So like really, he doesn't have to see that Russian thing. But
yeah.
But I like that they changed that.
But it made it interesting for where the movie was released at the time. So
yeah, I do like the Star Wars inclusion.
Star Wars / Trek.
Yes, because they're both important.
It was funny because it was all very different things.
Yeah.
Like I Love Lucy. It kind of tried to hit a lot of decades. Like, I Love Lucy was on. And it reminds you how old he is, the fact that he, like, missed I Love Lucy.
And it's also interesting that someone was like, oh, like, to understand this cultural moment, you should probably watch I Love Lucy so that you understand, like, where television is gone.
I feel like he probably just started making a list to get people to shut up.
Yeah.
Be like, yep, I'm writing it down.
I'd do it. But I feel like he should watch Serenity.
He should. Not Firefly.
No, never Serenity.
Never Serenity.
Always Firefly.
Always Firefly.
Serenity was a dream.
That is correct.
I would like to say you should listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I would say like YouTube videos. I'm trying to think of like a YouTube creator.
Well, he
is
reading the entire internet.
I think he would. I think he would like Hardcore History with Dan Carlin. I think he would really like that.
Hardcore History.
Yeah, and then he could catch up on history too.
It was crazy because like. There was stuff on there, like Berlin Wall Up, Berlin Wall Down was funny, but like Also, you know, he doesn't know about 9/11.
Oh my god! Yet. Yeah,
like, he doesn't even know the World Trade Center exists. You know, like, to begin with, probably.
Yeah, he got to look at World Trade Center up, World Trade Center down.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, which,
I think
like, they you kinda, can't write that.
Yeah, I think they kind of shied away from, like, let's not bring everybody down.
Yeah.
They were like, 9/11, Japanese internment camps. I mean, he knew about that. But, like, actually, he's got to figure out how we feel about that now.
I think Marvel actually sent atomic out a
bomb. Oh my god, he missed the bomb!
For ideas.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. He did miss a bomb. But I feel like that would be something Cap would seek out, is the stuff that they did wrong. Because he's, I mean, that's kind of like his deal.
Well, and that's what Peggy Carter says, is like, we all messed it up, you know?
Yeah.
I was very confused by that moment where Nick Fury was telling some story about how his grandfather, like, operated an elevator. And I was like, are you trying, what are you trying to say? Like, there's something very weird and romantic, but also, like, I don't know. I don't even know what is happening at this moment.
I thought that whole story was going to be about, like, why he hates elevators.
But he was...
but, like,
the whole idea was he was making an analogy between his grandfather and Project Insight.
Yeah. Which is sometimes you have to prevent the violence, because his grandfather was preventing it by having the 22 in his bag.
He was being preemptive.
Yeah.
That was the
And then the grandfather loved people but didn't trust people. Exactly. Yeah. The same way he loves people.
Well, and some of that's, you know, a commentary on race in America as well, because, like,
I didn't think it was a super astute commentary on race in America. But I think
it was,
like,
astute.
No.
But it was just a commentary.
Yeah. And it's funny because Nick Fury has not always been black.
No, yeah. Nick Fury was originally white man.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They changed him specifically to look like Samuel L. Jackson.
Like, they actually had to call him and say, can we use your likeness in our comic book?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yeah.
What did he say?
He was like, hell yeah. Oh, awesome. Actually, he was probably like, you know, a lot worse language. Yeah.
But another thing you have to understand about Samuel L. Jackson is he has never turned down a role unless it conflicted with another job.
Yeah, he said he will never turn down work. He will do whatever pays him money, because he's a working actor and it can go away in an instant.
I like that philosophy.
Hence, snakes on a plane.
Wait, Samuel Jackson has actually said that out loud?
Oh, yeah. He's like, I won't turn work down unless it conflicts with another job. Like, I will not turn work down.
Wait, how has he not been, like, put in a lot of stupid things?
I don't think people can afford him.
Snakes on a plane.
So he will turn work down if it's not affordable.
If it's conflicted with another job he already has.
But if we were to reach out to him and be like, we have an idea for a web series.
I think he would talk to you. I think he would talk to you. Or his people
would,
rather.
But I think we would have to, one, pay him enough.
Yes.
And secondly, if another job is more interesting than the job you've already agreed to, but you haven't signed a contract
and pays more.
Or pays.
Then you could jump onto that thing.
Yeah.
But, like, why don't we see, you know how, like, Nick Cage, you know about how, like, Cage was in, like, the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme and then all of his money was taken? And that's why we saw him in, like, all of those horrible movies forever.
No, I think he just
But you would see him
movies.
In, like, a movie every 6 months.
Yeah.
And I know we see Samuel Jackson, like, a little bit in all the Marvel movies, but I don't feel like we see him in, like, every movie ever, you know?
No. He works a lot, though.
Like, in the same way we see Nick Cage, like, 24/7. Like, you know?
But Sam Jackson works a
lot. Maybe I'm just not watching enough Samuel Jackson movies.
There you go.
Maybe he just does, like, a lot of he does a wide variety of genres. Maybe he does a lot of voice
does
acting.
Does he not do TV? Does he not do TV?
I haven't seen him on anything, but that doesn't
let's
mean...
Let's see.
Johnny's looking, aren't you? Work.
He currently has 10 upcoming projects.
Yeah.
The man doesn't stop.
Well, good for him then.
So yeah, the original Nick Fury was white man, and they originally retconned him to look exactly like Samuel M. Jackson. So when the Marvel movies came out,
it was like, who are we
going
to
have?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that was before the movies.
That was pre MCU.
Yeah.
It was like, there's no question. It's going to be
Samuel
L.
Jackson.
Yep. I love that.
Interesting.
Explicative.
I like that.
I still feel like Samuel L. Jackson opened himself to way too much of a bag of worms.
When he said that.
Well,
or, like,
I mean,
whatever,
you know,
but
you're
the phrases for
you're
that.
Yeah.
He opened a can of worms.
Like,
you don't bag
that
worms.
That makes me nervous for his career. But at the same time.
But if he's already working, like, then he can turn a stupid stuff down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because people are throwing money at him at this point.
I mean, it's Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Because God knows what he made for Infinity War, and he was in it for, like, 3 seconds.
Yeah.
But contracts.
Exactly. That's true. That's a good point.
Because I think Sebastian Stan has a contract for 8 movies.
Yeah, that's so funny.
I actually like the idea of on Captain America's thing. It said snakes on a plane.
Snakes on a plane.
Snakes on a plane.
It said you've got to see snakes on a plane. Just as like a jab at Samuel Jackson.
I mean, like, it's not the most serious of subject matters.
Yeah. It would have been better than 9/11.
I mean, that's true.
Oh, God.
When we were talking about race, I was going to say, I like the moment when Samuel Jackson is in his car and the police officers pull up next to him and he just, like, gives them a look in a way that was like, ah, you seem to be a little bit aware of, like, at least current racial politics, even though you have a weirdly romanticized image.
And it's funny because those cops...
Like, do you want to see my lease or something?
And it's funny because those cops end up being the bad guys.
Okay, so
here's
a problem I have with that scene. So they have the whole car chase scene, and then they have him stopped, and there's a police car in front of him, and there's a police car behind him, right? And the police car behind him, the front of the car is up under the rear end of his truck, right? And then 2 scenes later, it's back about 2 feet.
Yeah.
And then he backs right into it. And then
Then he backs into it. Yeah. Yeah. That's the kind of thing that Janya notices.
That's what I do.
I was like, it's a car chase.
I liked that. I thought that the action in this movie is very well done.
I thought it was too.
Yeah, especially the car chase action. This is, I actually wrote
car
down,
chase
like the
scenes
only...
are my sexuality.
I don't tend to like them, because, but I like both of these.
Well, it's funny because in Avenger, in the MCU, I don't think they've done car chases well. Well, I think a lot of times in MCU when they have car chase scenes, like thus far in our watching, especially like Iron Man 2,
yes,
it's like they're randomly at the Grand Prix.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, that's a bad car.
But like,
we don't talk about
but
Iron
like
Man 2.
Other times that there have been car scenes. There's
and there's a bunch of like street stuff in Iron Man 1 that's like the worst part of them. You know, they're like fighting, they're like holding this family of people in a car, and it's like, oh my God, who cares about any of this? And then they go in the sky and you're like, thank goodness.
Well, and it's funny because it almost feels like the times it's happened thus far, like, it feels like they're throwing cars in to like differentiate things, but you're kind of like, why would they ever be in cars? Whereas in this movie, it feels like, oh, this makes sense.
It was
like,
organic.
It's like Nick Fury.
Yeah, and,
you know?
The thing that's
like...
helpful about it is that it's not like they're like, we're in a fight now. We got to get in our cars. It's like they're driving someplace and then the fight comes to them and they're like, frick, we're in these cars. We're like hindered by the cars,
yes,
which is nice.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I thought this was very well done.
And it really felt like there was like, this kind of car chase scene versus other car chase scenes, it felt like just the... Because it starts from a place of them stopping, it's kind of like, oh my God, he's gotta get out, get somewhere. And the fact that the car even gets moving is exciting.
But it has
Whereas,
air
like,
conditioning.
Other times when you see a car move away, you're kind of like, oh God, now it's gonna be a chase. You're just like so relieved that it's like moving out of the place of being completely cornered.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. They build up the tension.
And it was just good car chase. Yeah.
I also
it was.
Think that
it was
the boat scene is really good. I think the sound space of that is so good because Captain America is so quiet in a way that's just like very like tense and interesting and good.
The boat scene.
When they're on the boat.
Okay. Yes.
They jump
the
out of the airplane. That's beautiful. And then he's on the boat.
Yeah. That scene was really well shot because it was very, it felt seamless, almost like it was a continuous shot, although
even though it
wasn't.
It feels really just like smooth. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And then that final scene with
Batroc,
yeah.
Au revoir.
Yeah, because that's the fighter, the person he's fighting is an actual
Ultimate Fighter,
and he is not a stunt double.
Oh.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
And they played into his fighting style.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
So good.
Yeah, so
that's I think that's,
I will say,
probably
that's
my favorite fight in the movie.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite fight in the movie, but then it ends with sort of weirdly because then there's that scene between him and Natasha, and it's the only, like, gross butt shot we get in the
It does
whole
take
movie.
You out of the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, funny because she's, like, walking out of the room, but still it's, like, so viscerally her butt, and you're like, I don't think you would ever frame, like, if a man was walking out of a scene... And they're, like, weirdly, you just, like, had their butt in the shot like that. You would be like, this is kind of an ugly angle. We should try again. But when it's Scarlett Johansson, you're like, oh, yeah, good.
Yeah.
We got it. That's a wrap.
Cut the check.
Cut the check.
As Anthony Mackie would say.
I like that.
No, if you, and behind
he
the
does.
Scenes.
Oh, my God.
Anthony,
that's how he ends takes.
He ends every take with, cut the check. It's sad, really.
It's adorable.
I have one weird buffalo I want to talk about quickly, which is just that I thought it was very weird and interesting that Captain America had his shield, like, in his apartment. And just a way that, like, especially because the Hulk movie is so much about, like, the government feeling like, oh, like, experiments were performed on you by yourself, but still we feel like we own you. And it's weird that no one feels that way about Captain America, you know? It's like, he can just, like, take this incredibly rare weapon and just, like, put it in his home. And no
one
is, like,
I think some of that's down to Fury, though. Because Fury's given him, like, a leash of some sort, but also, like, he's under constant surveillance. He's got Sharon next door watching him.
Yeah, that's true.
No, next door is Kate.
Oh, yeah, Kate. Her name is Kate. Quote, unquote, Kate. Yeah, yeah. Neighbor.
Do we have anything else? Do we want to rate? My water buffalo is just that there's so many Chevys in this movie.
Yeah, and also, like, the Apple Store.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that.
Oh, yeah. The Apple Store. Oh, my God. That was hilarious.
The scene with the Genius Bar employee.
Oh, God, I love that. So specimen.
The Chevrolet that Sam drives is... I actually used to have that car, so...
Oh, really?
Close to... It's a Chevrolet Impala.
Yeah.
I used to have one.
Did you feel like, I drive a good car when you saw that movie?
I did. I love my Chevys.
But yeah, like... But I don't think it was as blatant as it could have been. Like, I don't know if you guys have watched Warehouse 13, but my gauge...
I love Warehouse 13.
Yeah, my gauge of bad product placement is the Prius stuff in the third season.
Oh, God.
So, like, if it's not that bad, I'm cool.
Wait, it was...
Have you seen Bones, too?
Yeah, Bones got real bad about it, too.
Yeah, they did it, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it was in
They would
the
also, like, have this thing where they'd, like, call in or they'd, like, adjust the air conditioning. So and they'd be like, what the heck? Why is this happening?
They do it in Lucifer. With the Surface.
And it's the Fox shows. Fox is real
Fox
bad about it.
They also, they did, there was a period of time where they were, like, doing it on, like Nickelodeon television shows where it was like, oh, let me just quickly use my Zuno hotspot, or, like, I gotta just quickly send someone a message on Kik. But then also, they do it in Spider-Man Homecoming with that Audi commercial.
Yeah, well, Iron Man's always been an Audi commercial. Like,
no, but
as far,
Spider-Man Homecoming
even back
is the moment
one.
Where Happy's like, look, I'm driving hands-free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't
just,
as bad
I
as it could have been.
I still can't get enough of the first Thor 7-Eleven sign.
Yeah.
I just thought that the Chevys in this movie, there were shots of it where you were like, this literally looks like footage from a Chevy commercial. Like, not in a way that anyone was like, let me really talk up the features of this car, but just, like, the way we were shooting the logos, you were like, oh my God, I switched stations.
And see, I'm just happy when they're not talking about the features. Like, that's when I'm just like, I'm cool.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I don't mind it. I just notice it.
Yeah.
Just makes me think, like, how much money did Chevy pay for those great trailer shots that the Russo brothers got for them?
So much.
Maybe nothing.
Yeah, they might have done it.
Or they might have just given them the cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, when you get a logo like that, I don't think so. I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, but we'll never know.
Yeah, we'll never know. That's true.
Marvel's pretty savvy, though.
Yeah.
Because this was this pre-Disney owned?
No, this is Disney has owned since Captain America, the first Avenger.
Yeah.
Okay. Or actually, since
they
Iron Man 2.
Way back when.
Yeah, Disney's all, Disney loves corporate tie-ins.
And then Paramount stops distributing them after the Avengers.
Okay. Okay.
Do we want to rate now? Are we ready to do that?
I think so. I feel good. Do you guys feel good?
Yeah.
So we rate by ranking them. Currently we've got Avengers in spot number one, and then Thor the Dark World in spot number two, and then Iron Man in spot number three.
Oh,
I don't think we need to go any lower than that, right? Like, that's as I'm don't think that we should put it four.
So you want to put it above okay, cool.
For us, this is one.
Do you want to tell them our whole list just so they know?
Oh, you want to do it just for the sake of doing it? Sure. I think I can do it off the top of my head. We have Avengers, then Thor the Dark World, then Iron Man 1, then Iron Man 3, then Thor, then The Incredible Hulk, then Captain America the First Avenger, then Iron Man 2. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that was true.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
We're aware that our Thor the Dark World placement is controversial.
But as long as you're aware.
Wait, so what would you guys have with all of those that
we
just
thought
ranked,
that movie was
like what was your rank?
Okay, we would do, I mean, Winter Soldier's always been top for us since it came out. I think for me, Avengers would be second.
Yeah.
And then would you put Thor first or Cap 1?
Cap 1.
interesting.
Yeah, Whoa. I personally love Cap 1.
But she also I would put that against Thor.
Okay, so if we're not talking future movies.
Yeah, we're not talking future. We're just talking
this one
and pre.
Thor and Cap 1 would be a tough third.
Okay, and then...
Interesting.
Oh, God. Probably, God, wouldn't...
Iron Man 1.
Iron Man 1's up there. And then, God, what else? God, there wasn't much else. Probably...
I can't believe Thor 1.
Thor 1 over Thor 2. Thor 2 was so fun. And no worse than Thor 1.
I had so many problems with Thor
2. I have so many problems with Thor 2.
Yeah.
didn't have problems with Thor 1?
I have no problems with Thor 1. I have lots of problems with Thor 2.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then...
Does Incredible Hulk even make the list for
you? No, it's bottom. I think it's... Well, no, it's
Iron Man 2?
I was going to say, I think Incredible Hulk is better than Iron Man 2.
Okay, true.
Yes, we agree. So,
I think Iron Man 2 is the bottom.
Iron Man 2 is absolutely the bottom for us.
Iron Man 3
was not great.
Iron Man 3, we just felt like we weren't understanding, so we were like, I guess we have to put it high.
I don't think they understood.
If you don't have an understanding of PTSD... Then no.
But also, there was a lot of things beyond that.
I was a little too connected to Iron Man 3. It was a little too familiar for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, which, again, I gotta give them a little credit for delving into that where a lot of comic book movies wouldn't
do it.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because Steph and I both sort of felt the same way, where we were we don't have experience with, anxiety attacks, but we were like, I don't think that this is really, doing a good job of capturing the experience, but also, we appreciate
but
that they're trying.
It did.
Yeah.
As someone who has had anxiety attacks, it was not too far.
So, I respect what they were doing, but I don't know
that. The way that it was shot made you feel, you were like, oh, this is a familiar sensation, or it was just like, oh, this is a familiar subject matter.
No, yes. Both.
Yes.
Okay. Both? That's interesting to hear.
That's good. Yeah.
So, I applaud what they did, but also, that didn't make up for the weak-ass story.
That's true. Yeah. But I love the kid.
Yeah, the kid was great. Harley was great.
The kid was great.
So yeah,
the kid is also a good prequel almost for Homecoming. I feel like
because Tony has weird relationships with kids. He's creepy Uncle Tony.
I'm not gonna go with Spider-Man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
So I think that's ish our ranking.
Yeah.
Okay. So where are we feeling about this? I am okay putting this 1, 2, 3 or. Yeah, 1, 2, or 3. I don't think it's better than Iron Man.
Because we right now have. Avengers at 1, and then Thor 2 at 2.
Right? I mean, I do love Avengers. I do love me some Avengers, because, Loki.
Also, so much more Maria Hill content.
I am fine putting this above Avengers, because I don't know why everyone's, I get why people are into Avengers, but, at the end of the day, and I mean, I know we haven't gotten to the other movies yet, but I think Infinity War is much more interesting than Avengers, so at this point in time, it's, almost, Avengers is not that cool to me. Whereas, these other, individual movies are really cool to me right now in a way that Avengers is, kind of boring to
me.
I don't know.
I think that Loki is still an incredibly compelling villain compared to Zola.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
That's true. Plus, Avengers had so much to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that Avengers accomplishes so much that it had to do, whereas Captain America... This movie has a lot to do, but I think that it's a little bit less ambitious than
It's more focused.
Yeah,
true.
It is. Yeah, and it's also interesting in the sense that this movie does set up Bucky really well. Does set up a lot, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Because yeah. Bucky.
I like this movie. I think I would say 2 over 1, but I'm okay to put it at 1 if you feel strongly about that.
I'm also fine to put it at 2. I mean. I also like our visitors weighing in, too. I mean, because it could be a split even tie. We, put them tied at 1. I did like Loki.
I love Loki.
And I did like that whole space scene, even though the shrimp thing were kind of weird. The fish.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the Avengers, the fish,
Oh, the giant
the
sea
fish
creatures.
Monsters. the robotic fish monsters.
Yeah, the giant
That's how
ones?
I think at the end of the day, differentiating all the movies from one another, I think of the most vivid visceral visual scene, and that for me for the Avengers is the fish monsters.
And you're referring to the giant whale creatures, not tiny fish.
Yes. Oh, not, yes. Okay.
Yeah. I was picturing the guy from The Shape
that
of Water.
That also remind me eerily of Incredibles for some reason. I don't know why.
I could get that. Yeah, I could see that.
Even though The Incredibles doesn't have flying things, but it does. I don't know.
So are we saying 2 then, or are you gonna say 1?
Yeah, I guess 2. I guess.
Cool. So that makes, so that, that puts this, which I think is correct, that put this above Thor the Dark World.
Oh, yeah, it should definitely be above Thor the Dark Lord, whatever.
The Dark Lord. Thor
I'm
the
sure,
Dark
Lord. No, I'm sure that Thor the Dark World will get moved down as we get deeper into
Thor the
things.
Voldemort.
I really do like Thor, though, because of that movie, not because of the first movie.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys ranked Thor 1 above the second Thor.
I'm a slut for an origin story.
That's true.
I love
Thor's
a good
origin story. Is
I
like,
just really felt like the Dark World was not very cohesive.
Yeah.
I guess so.
I think that, and I felt that they misused
Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah, Eccleston. Yeah.
They totally threw him as away as a character. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's
yeah.
Eccleston?
Christopher Eccleston was the Dark Elf.
Yeah.
And he was also
Ninth Doctor?
The Ninth Doctor.
Oh. Yeah. Wow. I didn't...
The Night Gawker?
The Ninth Doctor.
Doctor Who.
Yeah.
That's so I think I truly didn't recognize it at all. He didn't do anything in that
actor.
Movie.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, but that heist sequence when they're breaking Loki out of the Asgard prison, that's great, you know? That's priceless.
Yeah.
And you get a little cat Loki, cameo.
I'm happy.
Yeah. Bucky.
I think, like, for villains, maybe Dark, like, the Thor Dark Lord World would not rank top, but for familial intensity,
yeah,
I would rank them really highly, you know? Okay. And that was what was really
Interesting.
Yeah, because
of the Mama Frigga stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The wait, what? The Mama Frigga.
Mama Frigga.
Mama Frigga.
Frigga.
Mother.
Frigga. Mom.
Is that her mom? Oh, yeah.
That's his,
I'm really bad with names with all these movies. I'm just like that character. But, yeah.
All right, cool. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our show here.
Yes.
So, a kind of weird
We told you we had a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were great feelings.
Yeah. You can find us on Twitter at RiverDamesPod. You can email us at RiverDamesPodcast@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jackie Frack and Steph on Twitter at Stephanopoulos18. Queenie and Janya, do you want to say where people can find you?
Yeah, you can find us on RandomTPodcast.com. And you can email us at RandomTPodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can get us on Twitter at RandomTCasts.
Or on Tumblr at RandomTPodcast.tumblr.com.
Or on Facebook at Facebook.com/RandomTPodcasts.
All right.
Back in our groove of pimping ourselves.
Nice.
That was a really great choreographed thing. I just like never say anything.
We do that a lot.
It's a disaster. Promoter.
I'm really bad at promoting that. I'd be like, River name spelled P-H-I-D.
Okay, well, thank you guys so much for being on our show. We end every episode by saying that we love you to each other, so I love you, Stephanie. And I loved having
you
guys
Jackie.
On.
We love you.
Yeah. And good night.
We loved being here.
I love people.
Thank
I love Bucky.
Yeah, you do. Thank you for having us, guys.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. It was really great to have you on.
Yes. Good night.
Good night. Good night, Gus. And
night.
Others.
Good night, Gus.